Hey everyone, welcome in to another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshall. Producer Nate Vaughn is by my side. We're inside TCO Studios at Winter Park, where in the last few days the action has intensified. The boys are back in town. The offseason program has begun. Pre-draft meetings are going on, and they're almost over because the draft is close. Lots of stuff going on in Vikings land. Nate and I are here to talk about it. Hello, Nate.
Hello, Wobby.
Hi. One of the things that's going on is something that you went and checked out, and you worked at it, and that's MVC Finals.
Yeah. Let's be fair. I wasn't the only one.
No.
It's not like I was just randomly showing up at the MVC Finals.
Right.
It was a very cool event, very well attended. Probably also helped that it's in the Rotunda at the Mall of America.
Yes.
They do a good job every year putting on a good show. Whether you have great feelings for or have no feelings for cheerleaders, when you're there, like, you see how much it actually means to the women that are trying out. So so it is a cool event, and it's exciting for all of them, and it was fun to be a part of. And everybody else already probably knows this because they all watched the live stream on Vikings.com the other night. So I'm not telling you anything you don't already know.
We're rehashing it.
Right.
So congratulations to the women who tried out and to the women who made the team. As of this recording, the team had not been announced, but for many of you who are listening many hours after this is recorded, the team has been announced. So if you want to check that out, you can go to Vikings.com. Vikings.com is going to be your source for lots of stuff to check out. Here in the next couple of weeks.
Today.
But today, most notably, because the schedule is going to be released. Now, because we have to produce lots of content and we need to have that ready to go right when the league announces the schedule at 7 p.m. on Thursday, Nate and I have seen the schedule, and there's lots to chew on, lots of fun parts of the schedule. And so we're looking forward to all of you being able to check out some of that content. PA, Ron Johnson, and myself. We shot a video here in the studio where we were breaking down the schedule. We chatted with Mike Zimmer in his office about the Vikings schedule because, of course, he has seen it. And then, we have lots of other stuff coming up, including the actual call that the NFL makes to the Vikings front office member who then notifies the rest of the club about the schedule. So lots of really cool behind-the-scenes inside information-like content on the schedule release will be coming to you on Vikings.com, so make sure you stay tuned for that. For now, though, we're going to give you something we can give you right now and you can listen to right now, and that is the NFL's Director of Broadcasting, Mike North. He's one of the four guys who creates the schedule, essentially. He works with the computers, works with a few other members of the NFL's of the league team on creating the schedule. And so he's got a lot of working knowledge of the process, and he's got a very creative way of describing it.
There are 256 games played every year in the NFL regular season. This is what the grid looks like to start the schedule-making process, with 32 teams, obviously, your stadiums, and then it eventually gets to this. You fill out a 256-game regular season. The man who puts that schedule together is here with us in Indianapolis, the Senior Director of Broadcast Planning and Scheduling. Mike North, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Andrew. Thanks.
How the heck do you build a 256-game regular season schedule?
It's a monster. No two ways around it.
Most difficult job in the league? Pat yourself on the back.
Certainly for me it is. The simple way to think about it is this. Look at any team's schedule. Take the Colts. We're here. Take the Colts. They got 16 games, any one of which can be played in any one of 17 weeks and on any one of five networks at any one of six different times. So if you start doing the math in your head, it's something like 17 factorial times 6 plus 16 factorial times 5 and all the way down. You're talking about 300 million ways just for the Indianapolis Colts schedule to be laid in.
300 million
ways just for the Colts. Multiply that across 32 teams, you're talking about hundreds of trillions of possible NFL schedules. You're looking for the mythical, magical one schedule that meets all your objectives.
All right, this is fascinating to me. This begins really the day after the regular season ends, because at that point, you know where everyone is in the standings. The formulas are done ahead of time, which division plays which division, second place versus third place, et cetera, et cetera. So you know everyone's opponents And truly, while we, while the league, while the media, while the fans are looking towards the playoffs at that point, that's the day your work begins.
That's absolutely right. That's the day when we finally know the last 64 matchups. There's two games for each team that are based on standings, where you finished in your division. And so when we finally have the 256 matchups, any fan can start looking at them and thinking to themselves, that's one I don't want to miss. It's Dallas-Green Bay. It's New England-Pittsburgh. It's maybe games that you haven't seen, the interconference games that rotate through every 4 years. This year we've got Dallas against Oakland, for instance. You know, so you're looking for those big games that the fans are going to be most interested in. And then our job is to put those big games into the biggest television windows. If we've got our big game, something like Green Bay-Dallas, which you know everybody's going to be interested in, to put that game at 1 o'clock Eastern time on Fox, with five other games going on Fox and four games going on CBS, and only 14% of the country, let's say, able to watch Dallas-Green Bay that day, that's not our best schedule. Dallas-Green Bay should go to 100% of the country if you can. That's our job, getting maximum value out of each one of those games.
And there are rules you have to consider. For example, you can't put the Cowboys on primetime every single week. You can't put any team on primetime every single week.
As much as our television partners hate it, yeah, you've got to spread around the primetime appearances, both to those clubs that, you know, traditionally are network television ratings draws, but also to those clubs that have earned some primetime exposure. There's teams in the league that are trending upward, better record year after year, maybe made the playoffs for the first time in a few years. That's a team that has played their way into primetime. So they're going to be somewhere on the primetime schedule. When we start with the magical, mythical plan to make all Green Bay Dallas's and New England Pittsburgh's and all the best games in the national television windows, we sort of lay them out ahead of time, almost as this is best case scenario. Let's put these in places where we know we'd feel real good about them.
This and then build around this.
Exactly. This is last year's schedule, and you can see some of the things we were trying to do last year just as a starting point. Things like Green Bay, Minnesota in week 2, that was to open up the Vikings' new stadium, a division opponent, Green Bay, on NBC on Sunday night. That was one of the first games we put in and locked in. Go from there. But at some point, you can't do all of this. So you lay in 15, 20, 25 games that you want to have in those spots. You try to solve around it, and you're just not comfortable with the solution. We're too constrained. Of the 700 and 800 trillion schedules that you found, this one isn't good enough. So let's add a little flexibility here. Let's pull some of these games off this screen and then see if that adds some flexibility to the search, and can we get a better schedule as a result.
And then you have factors like, say, the Pope showing up a couple of years ago.
That was a new one on us, yes. The challenge there wasn't so much that the city of Philadelphia needed a weekend where the Eagles were on the road. That happens. The challenge was that it was in September, so we were still working around the Phillies at that time. So as you looked at the first 4 weeks of the NFL season, we knew the Eagles were going to be on the road 3 of those 4 weeks. Not the ideal way to start the season for one of the NFL teams. So then it becomes our job to make sure that those 3 road trips in the first 4 weeks aren't all to the West Coast, or they aren't all to playoff teams. They aren't all something that are going to exacerbate a challenging situation.
So what is the computer? Is there one computer that does this? What does it look like?
It looks a lot actually like that grid we just had up. It looks like columns and rows, all the teams and all the colors. The colors represent our network partners, and the columns represent our teams, and those are home games, and we're looking to spread out the home games and the road games for each team. You can't play 4 straight road games. No team wants to play 3 straight road games, but it happens from time to time. What we do with the computer is we feed in all the rules. We say to the computer, a 3-game road trip for you this year might be a 50-point penalty. But a 3-game road trip for me this year might only be a 30-point penalty, because I haven't had a 3-game road trip in 11 years, whereas you just had one 2 years ago. The Green Bay Packers, believe it or not, had not opened the season with a 2-game road trip since 1924.
But they did this year.
Last year was the first time, because that penalty value is so low relative to the teams that opened with a 2-game road trip just last year. It's a penalty. It's a bigger penalty for those guys. It's a smaller penalty for Green Bay, to the point where it was almost a non-existent penalty. It had been 100 years since they opened with a 2-game road trip. It was only a matter of time before it fell on them.
Explain to everybody the penalty value. Are you trying to get all 32 teams closest to zero?
Zero. In a perfect world, yeah, it would be great if there were a schedule out there that was a score of zero. We use a negative-based scoring system. So every time that there is a penalty or a constraint that was violated or a request that we weren't able to accommodate, we take on a penalty. It's our job to determine the weights of those penalties. And that's how the computer thinks to itself while it's looking through the 800 trillion possible schedules. It's basically like looking through a beach for the best grain of sand.
Last thing on the schedule, Nate, and we already knew who we were playing and we knew where we were playing them. That's determined by the order of finish and by the schedule rotation that the NFL has adopted. We just didn't know when we were going to play everyone, in what order. And now we do. But even still, you don't know how your team's going to do in the upcoming season. You're going to hear lots of prognostications, projections, conjecture about how the team is going to do. The schedule did not get really any easier or tougher just because it was released. What it comes down to is how healthy are you and how healthy is your opponent when you play them. It comes down to not necessarily who you play, but when you play them. And, of course, we don't know that until we actually start playing the game. So that's just one little perspective to keep in mind on the schedule release.
Yeah, and it, as good of a point that is, you can't help but think, oh, this is a tough schedule, or oh, this is an easy schedule. But if you think about it, I remember 2 years ago now, maybe not to this exact day, but 2 years ago this time, the schedule came out for the 2015 season, and we all kind of thought it'd be a pretty rough road. Well, we won the NFC North.
Went 11-5.
Yeah. Last year, it seemed like it would be a little bit easier schedule before the season started. Stuff happens during the season for other teams and for our team, and we go 8-8. So we can make our guesses and everything, and that's fun right now and basically harmless because the season itself is still so far away. But it's something fun to talk about and something to get us by to the draft next week.
It's another pillar event in the off-season calendar for the NFL. I mean, you have the season gets over, but then you have the combine and you have the draft and you have the schedule release and you have free agency. And, you know, these are all things that keep the NFL atop the news cycle when it comes to sports in America. And the schedule release is right up there with all of those events. But a bigger one than even the schedule release is the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. That's really fun to talk about. We've been talking about that here on the Wobcast for the last several weeks. We went to the combine. We've monitored the pro days. We've done position reviews on our roster. We've assessed our needs, and we've assessed some of the players in the draft. So it's all starting to kind of come to a head right now as teams get to the end of the road on their pre-draft meetings at their facilities and set their board for the final time and kind of buckle down and get ready for the draft. One of our very good and successful television shows is Vikings Beyond the Gridiron. Nate Vaughn, producer Nate Vaughn, has a very profound role in producing that show. And we have a pre-draft edition of Vikings Beyond the Gridiron coming up for all of you who are going to be able to check that out on television. And one of the segments in the pre-draft episode is yours truly and voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, talking about the draft, Vikings needs, and some of the prospects in the draft. So here is a little bit of what you will see coming up later in the week on Vikings Beyond the Gridiron and some of what maybe didn't make the show. Here it is.
Voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen. The question is, O-line or not O-line?
I mean, when you come at it from 48, it's really difficult, in my opinion, to pigeonhole a position or a player because so much takes place in front of where you're going to select. Now, I would bet offensive linemen at that spot, but if they were to take a defensive guy and fortify what's already really good with this team, I wouldn't be offended by that. Now, maybe via Beyond the Gridiron, we can start a rumor involving Wisconsin tackle Ryan Ramczyk and get him to continue to drop in the draft. So maybe he's available around 48. Absolutely in love with the guy. I think he's going to be gone way in front of where the Vikings pick, but kind of somebody like that, it's very difficult.
Even with that collarbone injury he had?
A collarbone, I thought it was a sternum.
Oh, might have been
both. And I hear it was really, really bad.
Oh, man, he could fall to the second round.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Now, the beauty of what the Vikings did in free agency, they signed two offensive tackles who should start, Mike Remmers and Riley Reiff.
Yep.
So if you don't go offensive line at 48, you've got those guys who can start and maybe fill a void for you for a couple of years. You can pick up linemen later. Isn't that one possible philosophy?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you believe those who are most plugged into the draft, you know, without mentioning names, it's a really deep draft for running backs, safeties, cornerbacks, but you can get sneaky with project tackles, offensive linemen, and wide receivers around where the Vikings are going to pick in rounds 2 through 4. Mm-hmm. Now, I happen to believe that this is a year it's a really good year to have multiple picks in rounds 3 and 4, and the Vikings and the Indianapolis Colts are the only two teams as of now that have multiple picks in rounds 3 and 4. So from a philosophical standpoint, I don't really want to mess with that. I want to have that many picks through 4 rounds, and with that flexibility and that currency, you can kind of maneuver where you want to go to get who you want to get.
Now, if you want to be O-line heavy and go that way, you've signed the two starting tackles in free agency, yep. Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers. And
I need two offensive linemen through those first 5 picks.
Okay, well, if you want to go at 48, you have a guy like maybe Dan Feeney from yep. Indiana. Maybe mm-hmm. a guy in the first round that everyone thought would go there but drop, like yep. a Forrest Lamp or a Cam Robinson. Pat Elflein from Ohio State is another name that a lot of people tie to the Vikings. Dorian Johnson, or like you said, one of those talented tackles that you could kick inside to guard for a little bit.
Right, and with the names you mentioned who played guard, the kid from IU along with the kid from Ohio State.
Dan Feeney. Yeah.
You know, I think position flexibility can be in play here too. You know, back when the Vikings had Mike Harris and things were going really well with Mike, he would give you tackle and guard flexibility that really helped you in a pinch. So I know with Elflein, he was a center by trade at Ohio State, but he can also play guard. And he's also very athletic. So I think, you know, with what the Vikings do at 48 or through those first 5 picks, I think you'll be able to get a read on how they're going to want to play offensively. If they take one of these big Steve Hutchinson types who can really move you from the guard spot or the tackle spot, then maybe there will be more running between the tackles than we see now. If they take a more athletically gifted offensive lineman, maybe they get a little more stylistically sound with the offense. Latavius Murray, when he's healthy, he can catch it. Jerick McKinnon can catch it. I think they're going to take a running back who probably can catch it. Maybe they want to do more things on the perimeter. Mm.
I want to ask you more about that because running back was the next topic. There are lots of different flavors of running back, if you will. GM Rick Spielman said it earlier in the offseason. Now, at the top of this draft, you have Leonard Fournette. You have Dalvin Cook and Christian McCaffrey.
Yep.
Those guys are studs, probably going to be gone by by the time you get to 48. But after that, you know, you have Alvin Kamara from Tennessee. You have Joe Mixon from Oklahoma. You have Tariq Cohen, something called Tariq Cohen from North Carolina A&T.
Love him.
Who's really good.
Absolutely love him.
James Conner from Pittsburgh.
Yep.
So the point is, what type of running back do you want? Forget the names and where they might go. But think about the offense with Pat Shurmur. Mm-hmm. Think about already having Jerick McKinnon
yep.
and Latavius Murray. The type of running back that you would like from this draft.
Wobby, we have running backs now when they're all healthy, in my opinion, who are pretty good running it, you know, like 3.8 to 4.2 yards per carry type guys.
Okay.
But they both can catch it. McKinnon can catch it and run. Murray can catch it and run. And they're both high-end at pass protection, specifically Latavius Murray, who's been really good at that during his career. So I think finding a scholar of the game who is good at all three facets of running, and then you put him into the situation and you take good and find one facet of it and make it great. Maybe that's running, maybe it's catching and running, but I think a lot of it comes down to how the offensive line wants to play. You know, I don't think Riley Reiff is necessarily pigeonholed as a road grading type left tackle where he's just going to maul you play after play after play. Likewise for Alex Boone, likewise for Mike Remmers, who's tough, but he's also pretty active and pretty mobile. So the way I'm starting to look at this is maybe the offense is going to do things all over the field, which means Murray, McKinnon, somebody who can catch it and run wide and can get wide and do damage on the perimeter, that's the kind of guy I want.
If the Vikings address defense when they do in this draft, three levels of the defense, the D-line, the linebackers, and the secondary. You know, we're going to be missing Chad Greenway this season because he retired. But I don't know that that's a huge void in terms of snap count.
Right.
It's obviously a big void in leadership and production because Chad was good at both. But snap count from 2016, you're looking at like 25 or 30 a game at most.
Yep.
So if you went D-line or secondary, mm-hmm. if you could have your pick of an equally valued and skilled player, D-line, secondary, What helps Mike Zimmer out the most?
Well, you know, I like the signing of Dayton Jones in free agency. With all due respect to the adversary, I do think he was a little miscast in a 3-4 defense, either being a 3-4 defensive end or having to stand up outside as a linebacker in a 3-4. So I think Dayton Jones is a defensive end here, rotationally speaking, and moving inside in nickel or dime situations, I think that's going to be sneaky good. Now, with Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin and Linval Joseph and Brian Robinson, you know, the defensive line is one of the better and deeper defensive lines in the NFL. Doesn't mean you don't need help for down the road. And Zimmer and Andre Patterson, along with assistant Robert Rodriguez, are really, really good with defensive linemen. If they see one that they like in rounds really 3, 4, 5 or so, and they take him, I'm going to be cool with that. When you get to the secondary, from what I understand, there are anywhere between 12 and 18 safeties in this draft who supposedly can start day one.
Wow.
So if that's the case, I want part of one of those. And that's no knock on Andrew Sandejo. Maybe he'll be the starting safety. But with some of the omissions this offseason for the Vikings, like Red Ellison, Audie Cole, guys like that, Cordarrelle Patterson, we need a little help on special teams too. And safeties are generally so athletically gifted, they really help you on special teams.
Yes.
So that's what I would consider.
A lot of safeties in here in this draft class to like, I think. Guys that Mike Zimmer could work with. When we were at the Combine, Obi Melifonwu from UConn.
Yep.
6'4". Everyone compared him to Cam Chancellor.
Absolutely love him.
Tested off the charts at the Combine. He would be an interesting one for Mike Zimmer to get his hands on. Marcus May from Florida would be cool too.
Yep.
But if you want to go up front, you have Malik McDowell from Michigan State,
yep,
who was a really good player.
That could be a pick at 48, believe it or not.
Okay, a D-tackle. A D-tackle to bolster that group on the inside. You like him playing next to maybe Linval Joseph?
Yeah, and I like him part of the rotation, too. You know, I like the way they've done things with Linval and Tom Johnson and Shamar Stephan, but I do believe they need what we call a 3 technique, the defensive tackle spot that plays next to the nose guy, Linval, to provide more explosiveness from a pass rushing standpoint from that position in base defense, like first and second down. So that definitely can happen. To your point about linebacker and meshing that with safety, there are a couple of guys in the NFL, one plays for Carolina named Shaq Thompson, the other for Arizona named Dayone Buchanan.
Hybrid guys?
Yeah, those guys were safeties by trade in college, and they've transitioned to linebacker in the NFL. The one who did it extremely well more than a decade ago from Georgia is Thomas Davis with the Carolina Panthers. So I don't put it past the Vikings to find somebody who looks like a safety at first blush, but can play linebacker with Kendricks and or Barr, and also can stay on the field when you get into nickel situations. The home run guy for that is Jabril Peppers.
Michigan.
From Michigan. But he's going to be long gone, and I'm not a fan of trading a massive amount of picks to move up to get one guy, specifically this year. But that's the kind of guy I'm talking about.
48 to 32, which is what the Vikings would have to do to get into the first round. That is a big jump.
Yeah.
It would cost you maybe multiple picks, maybe a third-round pick.
I'm not a fan of that.
Not expecting that this year.
I'm not either, but I really, in a draft like this, again, there are two teams with multiple picks in rounds 3 and 4, and that is a valued place to be in a draft like this, having 5 picks through the first 4 rounds. That's a great spot to be, and honestly, I'd like to keep it.
So a good discussion there between you and Paul.
Yeah.
Lots of good names thrown out there. A lot of stuff that will be some of that stuff you like to call cutting room floor material for the show that we have to meet time constraints with.
Right.
But we included the whole thing there. What were some of the names that got you really excited in your and Paul's discussion about who might be available at 48?
Two that come to mind.
Okay.
One is the offensive lineman from Indiana, Dan Feeney, can play guard, also played tackle at Indiana. And, I'm not flying too close to the sun here by mentioning a name that might be possible for the Vikings. Everyone who does a mock draft or projects players to teams has identified Dan Feeney as a good target for the Vikings because of the Vikings' positional need. Dan Feeney played at the University of Indiana. He, as I said, versatile guy, and plays a position that the Vikings could use perhaps a starter. It's going to be an open competition for the starting right guard spot. And I think Dan Feeney would be a good candidate for that. And I don't think Dan Feeney is the only one who's a good candidate for that. I think there are other offensive linemen in this draft and other offensive linemen who could be taken at 48 who are good candidates. But given his background, pedigree, And where the Vikings pick, I think Dan Feeney makes a lot of sense. I believe Jason Spriggs, who also played at the University of Indiana, was drafted by the Packers 48th overall last year. So that would be kind of a cool thing for teammates to go back-to-back years, the same overall pick, and go into the same division. Another name I like, though, is on the other side of the ball, Obi Melifonwu. And I don't know if I like watching Obi Melifonwu better or like saying Obi Melifonwu's name better. But
both
either way,
are exciting.
Yeah,
things.
Both are exciting. Nate, when we were at the combine, Melifonwu kind of stole the show for DBs. Jabril Peppers was kind of the star for defensive players, especially linebackers and secondary guys. But I think right after him was Obi Melifonwu because of some of the numbers he put up in the athletic events, the long jump, the high jump, 40-yard dash, three-cone drill. All of that, you know, he tested really well. He's been compared a lot to Cam Chancellor solely because of his size. He's like 6'4". And I know the Vikings drafted Jayron Kearse and Andrew Sandejo comes back and all that, but I'm intrigued by Melifonwu just because of some of the rare combination of athletic traits and size and what a lot of scouts would term as he has big guy size and he can move like a small guy, you know. So that combination is sometimes rare, and I think that Melifonwu has it. Now there are plenty of other solid names out there to tie to the Vikings at 48. But the other thing to remember is the Vikings don't just have number 48. You know, they have three picks in the top 86, and they have five picks in the first four rounds, and they're scheduled to pick eight times overall. So I know we don't have a first round pick, but that doesn't mean our draft dreams are dead. The Vikings should be significant players in the first few rounds of the draft. I'm looking forward to them adding some talented players, addressing some needs, hopefully, but more importantly, just getting good players. That's the name of the game when it comes to the draft. And we're going to go to the draft. You're not. You went last year, though.
I did. I went last year. Yeah. I'm going to be watching from the office this year, which I'm also okay with because I think we usually get food.
So. Yes, you will get food, and guards will be down a little bit on Thursday night here at Winter Park with no first round pick. No,
at least in VEN, right. Guards will be down. I can't speak for, you know, the decision makers.
Yeah, I don't think their guards will be down. No. I think they'll be working the phones.
Yeah,
you know, because everyone knows that Rick likes to move up and move back and all that, and so I bet you some teams will call the Vikings, and what the Vikings do with that, we don't know. We'll find out on Thursday, but. They won't be twiddling their thumbs up there. They'll be working hard as they always do. And a couple of us will be there in Philadelphia watching it. The draft will be outside, in Philadelphia on the Rocky Step. So I'm looking forward to that. I've been to Philadelphia, but I've never gone to see the Rocky statue or the step. So I'm going to do that. And we'll be producing and sending back some cool content from there. We're going to take the Vikings draft cap and go around town with it and photograph it in cool spots and put that up on like some of the social media channels, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, etc. And we'll interview some of NFL media's finest that we've talked to plenty of times already, but now we're going to talk to them on draft eve, so that should be pretty cool. And Nate, you kind of paved the way for us last year in Chicago. You had a good experience, so we're going to go back and do it again. Any tips for me?
In Philly, or just in the
just
draft,
the draft
in general?
In general.
Get to the red carpet early. If you guys are going to go to the red carpet, which they did last year, I'm sure it's not the first year they did it, but it was the first year I was at it.
Yeah.
They told us to be there at 4:00. They weren't going to let anybody in before 4:00. So we show up at 4:00 and everybody's been there for like 6 hours.
Got it.
So,
all right.
So 4:00 means 10 a.m.
Right.
So,
oh man, that's early.
And then you have the time difference because it's in Philly, so it's Eastern time. So you got a lot to think about.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm excited for it. Then we're coming back Friday to cover the second and third rounds right here from Winter Park. So long story longer, tons of content coming up for you guys on Vikings.com. Schedule release stuff, Vikings cheerleaders, roster announcement stuff, and then, of course, the draft next week. So that's it for now, though. We're all done with this Wobcast. We're going to come back to you next week with another edition of the Wobcast. It will be the final pre-draft edition of a Wobcast for the year, so that's exciting. And then, of course, the draft kicks off next Thursday night with round number one. So that'll do it for today. Thanks again for listening. On behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobchall, signing off for now, wishing y'all a good weekend.